Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday evening, and I will be catching up with Scott Hartnell, former Predators forward, twice. One stint to start his career, and then a second stint to end his career back in the 2017-18 season. His career starting back in 2000, the fall after he was drafted that summer. Really looking forward to catching up with Scott Hartnell. We'll go over his early playing days to what he remembers about the 06-07 season, a great regular season for the Preds that ended up coming to an end against the San Jose Sharks in the first round that year, and also his final postseason with the Predators, where he was benched for a handful of games by head coach Peter Laviolette, a lineup decision that had him out of the lineup, and his feelings towards that, plus how he views the potential return of the National Hockey League to empty arenas. All of that coming up here on Preds Insiders. But first, I want to give a shout-out to Joel Ward. Former Nashville Predators forward Joel Ward today announced his retirement on the Players Tribune. And Joel Ward is a player that spent three seasons in a Predators uniform and had a standout 2011 postseason that resulted in him really cashing in that offseason with the Washington Capitals. And Joel Ward, a really fierce competitor. He was a really good find by David Poile back in the summer of 2008. Not many people knew his name back then when the Preds signed him, but they knew his name pretty early on in that 08-09 season when he finally stuck on the Preds roster. So hat tip to Joel Ward for a really solid NHL career, 726 games in his career. And he said in the Players Tribune that he wanted to be a dad, and that's the reason why he's ultimately calling it quits now. He's tried in the last couple years of continuing his NHL career, and nothing has come up, unfortunately. And Joel Ward announcing his retirement today from the National Hockey League. Want to congratulate Joel on a really good hockey career. But without further ado, our guest this evening on Preds Insiders, you know him well if you've been following the Predators for a long time. He is Scott Hartnell, and Scott joins us now on Preds Insider. Scott, thank you so much for joining us here this evening.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we walk down memory lane, I do want to get an update on how you're doing. I know we talked right before doing this interview how you and your wife are expecting here in the next little bit.
Yeah, expecting number two here probably this week. I think everything's progressing, and you know, it's a little kind of scary. Well, not little, but kind of a scary time to have a baby, bring a child in this world where, you know, they don't have immune systems and things like that. But, you know, the hospital has done a great job of separating, you know, the ER and COVID patients to just some maternity wards. So, you know, we feel very, very comfortable going in there. And, you know, it's going to be, instead of a Hartnell party of three, it'll be a party of four.
Well, good deal. Congratulations early. Early on that, and best of luck through that process. I know, like you said, a little bit of a tough time to venture into that world. But speaking of the world, it has been a different world. You and your wife getting ready for baby number two, but what else have you guys been up to during this quarantine period?
Well, I think just like everyone else, you find a couple shows that you watch, and you kind of bang through those in a few days or a week. And you know, we playing lots of crib. It's a card game that I grew up playing with my family. So I taught my wife a couple years ago. So now we try and play one or two games every night. We played Scrabble yesterday, you know, and during the day we had a lot of walks with my son. He's almost two, so he's getting that active stage. So we go on walks and pushing his little cars around and stuff, but just try and stay to ourselves just like everybody else. And we're all doing our part, and, you know, we're all going to get through this.
Have you watched Tiger King?
Yes. I was a little disappointed with all the hype for that one, but yeah, we did watch it, and you know, by episode 5 or 6, we were just like, should we watch it? While we're this far along, we might as well bang it out.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was going to be going into. I thought it might have been Netflix's version of Lion King or something, and then it turned out to be something completely different from that.
But, not PG anyway.
No,
kids anyway.
Not at all, and far from PG. But that's neither here nor there. Kind of want to go down memory lane on your career here in Nashville, and obviously it started in Japan. That's something that that I had forgotten, but your NHL debut in 2000 occurring in Japan. How weird of an experience was that to play your first NHL game overseas?
Yeah, I was very naive, obviously, being an 18-year-old kid, hardly ever been away from home, and, you know, you come into the, you know, what I thought was a big city back then, but fast forward to now, it was probably a small town from what it is these days. But, you know, going through training camp and, you know, meeting, you know, all these basically older men, right? And I'm an 18-year-old punk trying to take one of these guys' spots and, you know, was able to make it to, you know, the first couple games. And lo and behold, we had to take a, I don't even know how long, 12-hour flight to Tokyo and set up shop there and play 2 games against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So it was, you know, kind of a whirlwind start, I guess you could say. And I was able to make an impression those first, you know, 6 or 7 games for Mr. Poyle to tell me to, you know, go get an apartment or whatever and set up shop for the year. So it was very, you know, looking back, it flies by, obviously, but, you know, it's just cool to take in every moment. And, you know, not many guys can say that they played their first 2 NHL games over in another country, you know, being Japan, I guess.
Well, you played in over 1,200 NHL games. Where do those 2 games rank in terms of just a sheer experience in your NHL career?
Well, it's cool. You got to start somewhere, right? And, you know, the starting in Tokyo, I'll never forget my first shift. It was me, Greg Claussen, and Billy Peltonen. And, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins had the last change. It was their home ice the first game, and they threw out Jagr, Mario Lemieux, and Jan Herdina. And I look at the bench, and Coach Barry Trotz is, you know, giving the whirlwind with his finger, like, change it up. And, you know, me and Greg Claussen look at each other. He's like, okay, I'm going to win the drawback. We call it around the world. You're going to come around, Scotty, and get a shot. I'm like, nah, I'm pretty sure he's telling us to change. So we look back, and Trotsky's, like, standing on the outside of the bench or on the boards just telling us to change. So it was about 4 seconds to get all the way back to the bench and change. And, our, you know, we were both huffing and puffing. We're like, oh, what a shift that was. So pretty funny story for our first shift. But, 1,249 games it was, and, you know, some great playoff runs. And, you know, obviously you can't be great every night, but, you know, I thought played my heart out, for every team that I played for.
So you broke into the NHL as an 18-year-old. Not many get to do that. For you, what would be kind of your biggest piece of advice to somebody trying to break into the league at that young of an age?
You know, just kind of, you know, keep your head down and go to work every day. You know, I think, older guys in the league, the veteran guys, they look at you to see, you know, that you're not taking it easy, that you've made the club, that you're putting in the work, you're out there early, you're staying out on the ice after practice is done, working on things, working on your game, you're in the gym because, you know, you're still basically in a kid's body, right? So you want to keep on growing and just never be satisfied. You know, you have a good game, you can't think it's going to be easy the next one. It's going to be even harder because you're going to have a target on your back. And, you know, just keep going every day. You know, in the summer, you know, you try and obviously you need some days off, but, you know, no days off during the season and getting better throughout your career. And just enjoy it, too, because it does fly by. I played 17 years, 18 if the lockout there, and, you know, 405, but it flies by, and you know, it's kind of crazy that it's been 2 years since I've been retired.
Scott, who would have been the veteran or veterans on the Preds roster that took you under their wing?
Well, Tom Fitzgerald, he was the captain. Greg Johnson, Bill Holder, Cale Hulse. He was a single guy at the time, so him and I got to chum around quite a bit. We lived in the same apartment complex, so we, you know, made sure we had the buddy system, making sure we were up for practices and, you know, driving together to the airports and all that kind of stuff. So he was a great friend and a great role model. He's been in the league for a few years and, you know, kind of showing me the ropes. So we had a lot of fun together, and, you know, I thought I'd try to do that, you know, a Claude Giroux when I was in Philadelphia to try to be a mentor or a role model for him to, you know, make sure you're doing the right things. When you can have fun, you have fun. But, you know, when it comes to work and practice, you're giving it your all.
Recently here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, we replayed the first ever home playoff game back in 2004 against Detroit, Game 3, where you guys won that game. And it was Easter Sunday, and a lot of people have gone down memory lane with that game here in the last few weeks, with it being kind of the 16-year anniversary of that moment. For you, what do you remember about Gaylord Entertainment Center at the time and that atmosphere of the first ever home playoff game and games in Games 3 and 4?
Well, it was nuts. You know, I thought we played well in Detroit, and we were down 0-2. And, you know, I remember coming back, and, you know, we just had a lot of confidence, you know, skating at home on our home ice. And, you know, it was just like, let's go after them. You know, they had the stars. They had Stevie Y and Shanahan, and, you know, almost every Nicklas Lidstrom, said every big gun under the sun. But we just tried to go out there and do what made us successful to get into the playoffs and all that. And it was a special time, and, you know, those two wins to even up was awesome, and we just couldn't quite you know, catch on from there.
Did you draw any comparisons to the playoff atmosphere that you saw there in 2004 against Detroit to the one that you experienced when you were back in Nashville with the Preds and you guys finished or played against Colorado and Winnipeg back in 2018?
You know, it's kind of hard to compare, right? You got to probably watch films and whatnot. But,
sure.
You know, when that whole season, you know, my last year in Nashville a couple years ago, it was the fans were phenomenal. Just that whole downtown area, you know, I don't remember it being just as, you know, as big of a show as it is now. And, you know, people come from all over, not only to see country music, but, you know, especially to see a Preds game on a Thursday night, a Saturday night, a Tuesday night. So, you know, they've come a long ways on, you know, expanding the game there in the South, and, you know, the city's blowing up, obviously. But, you know, I really enjoyed my whole last year in Nashville. It was kind of cool coming full circle, and, you know, I was very appreciative of Mr. Boyle and, you know, Peter Laviolette taking a chance on me again, being an older guy, and, you know, thought I'd chipped in, you know, fairly well.
In the 2007 season, the team acquires Peter Forsberg. You guys are at the top of the league. And then the injury bug hits, including yourself there in March. Do you ever think back on that season and wonder what could have been if that team had remained healthy?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, I know when I broke my foot, and, you know, it was, you know, almost 6 weeks, I think, before, you know, I was able to come back and play. And I know Peter had his foot, you know, problems, and, you know, him and I were stayed back kind of rehabbing while the team was on the road. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, not going to say I was starstruck, but it was kind of cool. Kind of chilling around with Popa there. But, you know, it's, you know, when you lose that much time and, you know, you come back right in playoff time, and, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to adjust. And, you know, it's just, you know, puck luck or whatever it was, we definitely had a team that we thought we could go. You know, I think Thomas Fokun got hurt that, you know, right before playoffs there as well. So it was a tough little stretch for us. And, you know, looking back, you know, you can play that what-if game, but it's, you know, it is what it is.
Do you remember what the mood of the locker room was when you guys learned that you had acquired the FOPA, Peter Forsberg?
Yeah, you know, we lost a good man in Scotty Upshaw, and, you know, we were all jumping for joy, right? It's one thing when you can add a player like that. Obviously, his playoff success, the player that he was at the time, and you look what he can do for your lineup, but then you're like, wow, lucky Detroit doesn't get them. You know, lucky St. Louis didn't get them, because that would have made their team that much better. So you kind of subtract from those guys and you add to your team. And, you know, there was definitely a buzz in the dressing room for a long time when he got there.
Absolutely. Well, then the summer after that was the big fire sale. And, you know, this team looked almost like a skeleton of what it did that season. And do you ever think, kind of along the same lines, think of what could have been if that band could have been held together for longer than it had been held together?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, I think every kid that you get drafted, you know, you play 5-6 seasons with a team. It's like, okay, you become a UFA, or a year before UFA, you're like, okay, I'll, you know, sign a long-term deal. And, you know, maybe play my whole season with one team, right? And mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately, that only happens to very, very few select group of players, and obviously they're usually the superstars that you know, end up doing that. But you know, so I was a little hurt. I was a little shocked that you know we couldn't get a deal done, and obviously I didn't know much at the time about the ownership deal was going on, that you know maybe he had plans to sell and all that kind of stuff. So you want to unload some salaries, but you know, at the end of the day, it's everything happens for a reason. You know, Kimo and I come over to Philadelphia, and you know, I think we ended up going to the conference finals that year, and then a couple years later, we were in the finals. So it was never did win, but had some good runs and played some great hockey here in Philly. So, but yeah, to look back, to have you know Jason Harnett, PK, Fopa, myself, Spokoon, Kimo. You know, it's a darn good forward and D set of lines there. So it's you look back and you can always play that, you know, what if game, but, you know, it's not, not wasn't in the cards at the time.
What do you remember about Alexander Radulov as a rookie?
He was great. He had a lot of fire. He had a lot of personality. You know, him and I, you know, very similar, where we always kind of, not joking around, but love to have fun. And, you know, whether we cross that line of maybe too much fun sometimes, probably Barry Trotz would say, heck yes. But, you know, we had a good time just kind of chumming around and, you know, loved watching just his passion for the game, his love for scoring goals. He, you know, how he celebrates in a game is how he celebrates in practice. And, you know, you could tell this guy was a special player. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously his career in the NHL, when he went back to Russia for a few years, you know, kind of screwed up with some of his numbers and potential great seasons, but you know, still at his age right now, he's still firing all cylinders. It's one guy I love watching the Dallas Stars, is because he's he just brings that kind of fun element to the hockey game, especially knowing him too. You know how goofy of a kid he is. It's pretty fun to see.
Well, even the, you know, that was pre-social media when Alexander Radulov was coming up as a rookie, and there was a ton of hype around him even without that social media. And I always remembered his first few NHL goals thinking, this is a superstar in the making, that this kid is going to be, you know, one of the best forwards in Predators history. And it's just unfortunate that it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, he does have that firepower. And if he would have played, though, I think it was maybe 7-8 years, something like that, he went over to Russia and, you know, made some great money, and, you know, I'm not sure if it was a contract dispute or a personality dispute with the Preds, but whatever it was, it's you know, sad to see that he wasn't kind of letting the reins take off him like a Phil Forsberg, you know, like he flourished, you know, under Peter Laviolette, and, you know, the sick skill that he has and the stuff that he pulls off, you know, in a game, I wouldn't even be able to try and practice is ridiculous. So he's a fun guy to watch, but imagine those two guys playing together, ripping around, just throwing saucer passes and top shelf barring down. It would have been a nice little combination.
Back in, I believe it would have been the summer of 2005, Preds signed Paul Kariya, and really the first big free agent to willingly come here to Nashville. Did that change any of the mindset for the team back then of, man, we just made our first postseason, but now we're getting Paul Kariya, a future Hall of Famer?
Yeah, it was pretty neat, actually. Just kind of be friends with him and skate with him on a line, on a power play line, and watch how, you know, he prepared. That was kind of the biggest thing I took from PK, how focused and prepared he was. He was there, always there at the rink early. He was always, you know, focused, doing his stretches. Loved just the intensity that he practiced with, the games that we'd play after practice, whether it be tipping games or shooting games or, you know, the shot in a breakaway games for Gatorades and whatnot. And, you know, kind of chumming around with him for dinners before the game, and just how great of a person he was was kind of the coolest thing for him. So basically an all-around good guy, good player. But seriously, he was kind of a cool, you know, big proponent of me in my career, because I was looking, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I shouldn't slack, because Paul Kariya's not slack, and he's out there, you know, out there after I got off the ice, you know. So it was a big help for me in my career, for sure.
Kind of fast-forwarding to your second stint here in Nashville, back in the 2017-18 season, approaching the postseason, did you think that that was going to be your last chance at winning a Stanley Cup? Obviously, players never know when the end comes for them, but that was it for you. What did you know going into that playoffs that was probably it, the last chance for you to win a cup?
Probably. You know, there was kind of, you know, maybe wishful thinking that, you know, I was going to catch on somewhere else. And, you know, I know, you know, how young the league was going and, you know, the young kids, you know, and all the skills that they have. And, but you still, I think, you know, still to this day, you need some veteran guys to add some veteran leadership to, you know, hold the young guys accountable and, you know, just, you know, be a, just a point of contact, you know, between coaches and these young kids and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I knew it was kind of do or die for me. And, you know, I didn't play Mike. I played one game in the first series and a couple games in the second series. And, you know, it was unfortunate because I, you know, played almost all the games in the regular season. And when push comes to shove where I, you know, think I make, you know, a lot of, I guess where I make my hay in the playoffs, where it's tough and you got to fight for every inch and going to the net, scoring goals the hard way instead of, you know, like the first 10 games of the season where everything's easy and guys are scoring, you know, coming down the wing. It's a grind in the playoffs. So it was a very disappointing, I guess, ending for me, just not being able to get in every game. But, you know, I said to the guys after that game 7 loss, I just said, hey, I said, you guys got to, you know, can't take this for granted. This team is too good to, you know, sit there and wait for next year, because it's going to get blown up again. And, you know, guys are going to move on and, you know, you might not be as good as we were this year. We let this one go. And, you know, you look at PA, you know, PK Subban gets traded and, you know, some other guys are kind of, Kevin Fiala is gone. And, you know, you don't have that same group as we did that one year, which is unfortunate because I think we let a great year, obviously President's Trophy winner we let that year go.
You mentioned that your playing time went down in the postseason. Did that surprise you in the moment?
Yeah, I was pissed. Not gonna lie, it was you know, it was frustrating just because I think I'm very reliable, you know, forward defensively, you know, can get to the net, get on the forecheck, and you know, you know, I think Lavi's big thing was all about speed, and you know, you really look at it, it's not, you know, even though I wasn't fast as a Kevin Fiala, it was like, well, maybe I could read a play a little bit better than him and take that little shortcut to cut off a pass, or, you know, I definitely block a shot, you know, put my body in a line to block a shot more than another guy would or whatever, right? So it's those little things all count in playoffs. You know, you got to sacrifice the body and you know, I'm not sure if you know, I'm not calling anybody out, obviously, but I'm just saying it's, you know, I was very, very disappointed. I was, you know, let Lavi know that it was, you know, I probably could add a little bit more in there, but, you know, like, you know, hindsight's 2020, and, you know, especially that game when I think it was game 4 when I went in and then I got scratched for game 5 coming back to Nashville. It was, you know, very disappointing for me, but I even think my teammates were very disappointed as well that I wasn't in the lineup.
Before we move on to what it would be like today in quarantine time as an NHL player, you played for Peter Laviolette 2 different times in your career. Did you notice anything different between Peter from your days in Philadelphia versus that last season in Nashville?
No, he was the same guy. He loves the offense. He loves being a very aggressive, you know, forechecking team. You know, he has the left wing lock in the neutral zone. You know, obviously keep the puck out of your net. He's, you know, was blessed in Nashville with 2 great goalies, Pekka for sure, and Juice has had a heck of a season this past year. So, you know, he's a player's coach. He makes life at the rink a lot of fun. He's got like fun little games in practice, so practices aren't stale. You know, you're kind of it's a grind of a season, you know, if that's the right word, and he definitely has some fun things throughout the season to kind of pique your interest and you know, keep things fun and fresh. So he did the same thing in Philadelphia, and it was like, wow, this is kind of fun coming to the rink every day, and you know, you wonder what practice is going to be. It's going to be different. It's going to be competitive, and you know, I definitely love the way that he coached and his style of coaching.
So we've gone down memory lane a lot, and a lot of the discussion has turned up with postseason hockey. And We don't have playoff hockey right now, unfortunately, because of COVID-19 and the NHL season coming to a pause. And the expectation is that whenever sports return, not just the NHL, but when sports return, that there won't be fans in arenas, in stadiums. And I asked Matt Duchesne, Pred Center, about that on the rundown last week. And Scott, I want to get your response to, or your reaction to Matt's response to my question about whether he's thought about playing in front of an empty arena.
I understand that it's important for us to come back and play, and it would be very, you know, meaningful to people back home watching people that are going through some tough times, whether it be health or financial or just mental, the mental side of things is tough for everybody. But at the same time, you know, I didn't dream of winning a Stanley Cup in front of an empty building in the middle of wherever. You want to win it in the opponent's barn or in your rink and in front of your fans. That's what it's about, and that's what we all grow up dreaming about and wanting to do, and especially back home in Canada. You know, when you picture yourself winning the Stanley Cup in Game 7 playing road hockey when you're 6 years old, you don't picture it being in front of an empty building, that's for sure. So even just playing a playoff game, you don't picture that. So I have definitely mixed emotions towards the whole thing, and I understand it's what's, you know, realistic, but definitely a different mindset towards it than other years for sure.
That was Matt Duchesne. Scott, what do you take away from what Matt had to say there?
Well, he's bang on. You know, yeah, I think we all played street hockey as a kid, no matter where you grew up, and you know, Game 7, overtime, somebody scores, and you know, the crowd comes on the ice, your family's there. You know, you watch the playoffs and, you know, every playoff series, and you see, you know, everyone cheering and things like that, especially for the Stanley Cup. And, you know, to have nothing there would be obviously weird. But, you know, at the same time, heck, if this was my last season playing, I'd want to keep playing no matter what. But, you know, it's the safety there of everything and of everyone involved. And, you know, who knows if they can pull this off or not, if there is a playoffs or how the playoffs are going to work. But, you know, definitely not having fans would be different, and who knows, even beginning of next year might be a little sketchy in there, whether you know, fans are allowed in or not, depending on states and whatnot. But it's just a different world that's among us right now, and you know, I don't think anyone's has it figured out just yet.
Well, I think back to a goal that you scored in the Stanley Cup Final against Chicago back in 2010, where, you know, Game 6, your season is on the line. You score that goal to tie the game and force it into overtime, and the building just completely erupts. And there has to be an element, a huge element, of that emotion from the crowd seeping into the on-ice play as well.
Well, yeah, you got the goal song being scored. You got the whole, you know, especially in Nashville, you got the, you know, the chants coming, you know, from all the fans, you know, calling the goalie sucks, and you know, we're going to beat the hell out of you, and to not have that would be like totally weird. It would take definitely the emotion out of it, and even watching on TV, if there's none of that atmosphere, you know, I don't think you can replicate it with a song or you know fake crowd cheering or whatever it's going to be. But you know, who knows what happens with golf even this year? They're going to say golf with no fans, and you better believe when someone makes a 25-foot birdie putt on 18, push it to a playoff and the crowd's roaring, you know, that definitely pumps him up for that next tee ball. So you can go through every sport, and it's going to be a different, a big period of adjustment.
What would you say is the biggest challenge for a current NHL player or athlete to stay in game shape during this quarantine period?
Well, I think it's just mental for everybody. You know, it's a grind, and, you know, I'm not an athlete anymore or whatever, but I've fallen in love with the game tennis, and, you know, we haven't been able to play for 5-6 weeks, and, you know, you try and stay sharp. So I watch the tennis channel of old Wimbledon finals and French Open finals, but, you know, just to mentally stay there to, you know, do your workouts, stay in shape as best you can. But, you know, you don't want to lose that edge, because there's some teams that were flying hot. You know, the Preds were going to get in. I called that right from day one, even though they struggled the whole year, they're going to get in. And you know, that getting in the last game, you know, having that fire up for playoffs, you know, the Preds can be a dangerous team, you know, come, I was going to say come April, but we're already past April, come, come July, August, whenever the playoffs, if they do happen to resume.
So let's say the playoffs do happen in July, August, or even September. If you were still playing in the league, would you be okay with finishing this regular season slash postseason and just basically attaching it onto the next season and having almost a marathon season?
Yeah, I think there would be a little bit of time off. I've heard some rumblings that, say that that's finished in September. They wouldn't start the next season until November-ish, just to have a month off. Obviously the team with the Stanley Cup, you got a party for a couple a week or two anyway. Kind of recharge. I don't know, when they'd have the draft or any of that kind of stuff. That's over my head as well either. But I think you can definitely go into next July, to get a full season in and playoffs next season as well. So it's a tricky situation. It's a fluid situation. There's so many different scenarios you can look at. But, I think, any person is just worried about the health and safety of all of us humans and just making sure that we're all right and getting through this.
Scott, last thing for you. What do you miss most about playing hockey?
Just miss the guys. You miss the road trips, jumping on a plane go by these cool cities, all over North America. And, just being around the guys is one of the coolest things I missed. And, you don't miss the meetings, you don't miss the workouts, you don't miss the practices, but, you miss the games, the fans, and just being part of something that's so special that that's the one thing that, especially around playoff time too, you miss it even more. But summertime, I look at my buddies that are still playing and they're grinding for a couple hours in the gym and then a run. And I'm like, oh gosh, thank God I'm not doing that. So.
Scott Hartnell has been our guest here on Preds Insider. Scott, you've been very kind with your time. I won't take up any more of it. Best of luck with you and your wife expecting your second child here this week. And we'll talk down the road.
Cool. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. See ya.
Thanks so much to Scott Hartnell for joining me here on Preds Insiders. Always enjoy being able to catch up with Scott Hartnell. Some really good stuff there. Hope you guys enjoyed that. And if you haven't already, rate, review, subscribe. You can search Preds Insiders wherever you download your podcasts. And if you subscribe, the latest episodes will download straight to your phone. That's all we have here for Preds Insiders this week. We will talk to you next week on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game National app.